Today, we are thrilled to welcome Jermaine Defoe, a football legend whose journey transcends the field with stories of triumph, resilience, and the pursuit of greatness. Dive into the heart of a champion as Jermaine shares the untold chapters of his life, revealing the spirit behind the goals. So we've tuned in and we've turned on now. Okay. That's what we've done. What I've also done in this is I've placed some words. So you will now randomly pick a word and we will talk about that topic. So the universe pretty much controls the flow of our conversation instead of it just being around.
That's powerful.
Yeah, very powerful. So I'm going to just hand that over to your side there. And then if you can start with the first.
Wow, love.
Okay.
Oof, what a way to start.
Yeah, exactly. See, this is what I mean. The universe just knows how to start the conversation. Define love to me in your words.
Loyalty. I think the word that come out, love, I think the first person that probably springs to mind is probably the same for everyone, you know, your parents, your mum, your dad, nan and granddad, that deeper love. You know, my mum was always saying, she's always said to me, when you have your children, you know, you can have partners, but when you have your children, it's a different kind of love. And I used to be like, yeah.
But sacred.
Yeah. That deeper love.
Unconditional.
Correct.
Where else would you place something as strong as love with a part of your life?
It could be profession. Mm-hmm. I think in my case, love for football. I think something that, you know, from probably the age of two, probably from the time I could walk really, just always had a ball. You know, always loved playing football, whether that's in a school playground or on the streets with my mates. You know, West Ham youth team, signed for Tottenham. And just throughout my whole career, I think that love and obsession that I've had from day one, because, you know, sometimes it sounds crazy, but you get footballers that don't actually love football.
Yeah, it's true.
So I think it can, you know, it can link to your profession as well.
So, you know, when we talked about the unconditional love that you have with your parents and that kind of that sacred emotion that you have with your profession, do the volumes of it change dependent on whereabouts you are in your path? Did it change when you were going through challenging times within football?
No, it never changed, because I always felt like, first and foremost, I loved what I did. And that was from when I was young. And I never saw, along the way, of course, football's like this, like a roller coaster. You know, you get periods where it's going to be tough when you're not playing. And you get like, and even when you play well, there was times where you play well, you can't get too high because the next game comes around so quick. And then you've got to produce again. Those sort of like same performances, because that's what the fans demand, that's what clubs demand, and that's the sort of demand you should put on yourself anyway. So
how do you check in with yourself though to know that you're doing that and you're doing it right?
I think it was always I was always reminded though from my mum. I was always reminded that, you know, even when I got into the West Ham first team, I think the importance of respecting people, I knew from day one, you know, that I had to. Well, my mentality was I always had to work harder than the person next to me, because...
Why?
Just upbringing. That's all I saw around me. Like, my nan worked in... you know, have you heard of Tate & Lyle?
Yeah.
My nan worked in Tate & Lyle. It's like a sugar factory. My granddad worked in a meat factory. My mum was pregnant at 17, had me at 18 before my sister come along. Working around the clock, you know, just to provide when we left, obviously, my nan and dad's house. So, for me, that's all I saw. It's just people around me that were just willing to graft and work hard. So... Mm-hmm. For me, it was just normal. When I started playing football, it was just, okay, I need to work harder than this person if I want to achieve anything.
And that's kind of what you're saying makes you better than people, just 100%. Because your work ethic is that strong.
100%, because I think you can have all the talent in the world, it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. I think if you've got a talent and you don't work hard with it, it sounds crazy, but, and I've heard a few people say it, there's you're not going to get to where you need to get to. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen it many times, not just in football, I've just seen it. Where you get people that just rely on just their talent and they think they can cut corners and, you know, take their foot off the gas sometimes and just sort of like go with the flow. It just doesn't happen. I just don't think, you know, life works like that. I think if you're willing to maybe do things that other people are not willing to do, then I think you've got a better chance of achieving your goals, for sure.
Staying consistent as well, I guess, 100%. Is a part of that. I mean, when we talk about love, we have to talk about this bromance that you have with Ian Wright and Wrighty.
Oh, Wrighty. Yeah.
Explain that.
Oh, that started from a young age, really. You know, I think Wright's journey is quite unique, you know, the way he started, you know, going for trials and not getting in. I think he was playing for 10 and B when he was like 23. It's only, I think, because of, you know, David Rolcastle was probably the one that pushed him and said, no, I'll go for the last try at Crystal Palace. And yeah. Wright was like, no, I don't want to go because, you know, I've got a job and that. And then, you know, I don't want to get bad news again. And obviously I lose my job and I've got kids to look after and stuff like that. But lucky enough, he went, you know, and I suppose the rest is history, what he did at, you know, obviously Palace, you know, Arsenal and England. And just growing up watching Wright's goals, the celebrations, and I think around about that time, I think everyone loved Wright. You know, you didn't have to be an Arsenal fan to love Ian Wright. He was one of those players that would just play for free, really. It wasn't about the money.
Yeah.
It was just the appreciation.
He's a strong influence for you, though, growing up through your football.
Yeah, right? Massive. So I was obsessed with Wright. I had posters all over.
That's what I mean. That's why I kind of placed the love with him, you know?
Yeah, and you talk about love. He's so loving.
Yeah.
You know, when you see him and that, he'll that hold you and that affection that he gives you, that genuine love. And it was like that from day one, really. Because obviously Wright knew that. Because I remember I was at Charlton, right? It's funny. So I was at Charlton and Mark Bright was there. Obviously Wright and Bright at Palace.
Yeah.
They were close. I was about 15 at the time. And then I came back from a place called Lillishaw. It was like a football school of excellence. And because I was playing for Charlton at the time, so I came back, I trained with the first team for like a few days at 15. And I remember we was doing like a finishing session. The thing, I only found out that Bright only told me this story recently. So after the finishing session, Wrighty phoned Wrighty and said, Wright, I've seen basically the next you. Like, there's a clone of Ian Wright out there. Like, it's unbelievable. And I signed for West Ham, a year later, I signed for West Ham, and the first person I saw when I walked into the building was Wrighty. So it's just the way, like, the universe works. The way it happened, it was just crazy. And for a young 16-year-old kid to walk into a building and the first person you see was Ian Wright, someone you looked up to since...
How does it make you feel now? Like, you're obviously sharing this story because it means something to you.
It's just mad that life works, really, because back then you never could imagine that you're going to be friends with someone like that, you know, and go on to sort of like have a similar career that he had, you know, scored similar goals, played for England, all that sort of stuff. It's just crazy. But like I said, he was, you know, he's away from football. You know, what a guy, amazing person.
Yeah. Everyone loves him. Take the next piece of paper, please, if you will, Jermaine.
He's a bit mad. From the love to the game, did that say?
For the love of the game. So this is
For the love of the game. That's, And just like what we spoke about.
Yeah.
Obviously, a new film, documentary that's coming out. And even I don't think it's really sunk in yet, to be honest, because I was obviously doing a press day recently and like you see the board and, you know, it's Defoe and stuff like that. And even seeing that's crazy for me. You know, growing up in the East End and like I said, you know, playing football on the streets with my mates, just like emulating all the players that you see on TV and just hoping one day you have a chance to, I don't know, play in the Premier League. You know, even if I played for England once, for me, it would have been good enough because where I came from, you know, my dad played football, my uncles played, didn't really get the opportunity. So I felt like I was sort of like flying a flag for the family sort of thing. You know, all my cousins play, like it's my family just football mad. And to have a film now, it's just like, it just blows my mind. But love of football. And even to like, we spoke about like, you know, players that have different journeys in football and you get towards the like the back end of your career and sort of like the love goes a little bit and then, you know, there's stuff that's more important and, you know, some players get into coaching, some players never want to coach. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, even sort of like when I finished at Rangers and Sunderland, I always knew that I wanted to go into coaching. I always knew that I wanted to stay in the game because I love football and nothing makes me more happy. So looking forward to watching that.
And when you actually saw, because you would have seen the finished version. I mean, it's been worked on and you have an idea of what it's like.
Yeah.
But I guess it's like, you know, you're seeing your life being played out in front of you.
Mad.
I know you said it was mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But was it what you expected? Was there any part of it that made you think, you know, I didn't do this or maybe I could have done that? Or was it all just, wow, was that really me?
Yeah. I think with anything, especially where I am, I think there's always things that you'd probably look at and be like, maybe I should have done this or, but it is what it is. And like I said, I've been blessed that I've even got a film, to be honest. My life could have been completely different. And looking forward to seeing it again. properly. But it was just doing it was special, because I was speaking about a lot of things I've not spoken about for years. And it just brought back so many like memories of like growing up in the East End, you know, at my nan and granddad's house, smashing balls around, my nan moaning. My mum features in the documentary, she speaks. Spoke about my dad. I was just open, to be honest. So I felt like it was the right time, because...
You were being open. You said wanted to share stuff.
Yeah, okay. just being open and just being real. Mm. I think if you are going to do it, you might as well do it properly. Do you know what I mean? So I think, I was just being open. But I enjoyed doing it, like I said.
Mm. Well, let's start with another word.
Oh, life lessons.
So the whole point of this podcast is that for people that follow us, they are on a journey of self-discovery. And my thought process growing up, and my dad and my granddad, very similar to you, very tight, had very, very strong work ethics. And it was all about learning through other people, which is why I kind of set the podcast up. So through your life, not just football, but now the transition into being a coach, doing various other entrepreneurial things, because I know, like, you know, all footballers do that. What would you say has probably been your biggest life lesson? And it might be quite relevant to the fact that you've just had a film done about you where you've recognised something that you may now use as well in your coaching career with players.
There's probably been loads, to be honest.
Pick one.
You can't please everyone. I think that's a big one.
Where does that come from?
I think just the way I am as a person. I think sometimes, you know, when you've got a big heart and you want to please people all the time, and sometimes I've always felt like I've sort of like sacrificed my own happiness to keep other people happy. When you think, well, actually it's more important that, not more important, but you have to be happy in yourself.
Are we talking football here or?
Just in general, football as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of like, I think it links with everything. I think football as well. You know, whether that's the decision to, I don't know, stay at a club or go to another club, or, you know, personal, but I think understanding that you can't please everyone.
Do you think you can only learn that lesson in hindsight?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But again, I think it's life experiences, isn't it? When you're younger and you don't really think about these things.
Yeah.
You're just living.
But if you were more self-aware, like, what would you now, because it's clearly a life lesson that's important to you.
Yeah.
And you would share that with, say, some of the kids that you'll be coaching, if you identify that they could be having a similar kind of struggle, what would be your words of advice to them?
Just make sure you're happy first, I think. Just make sure you're happy first, because I think ultimately it's about you, I think. And I think when you're happy and you're the best version of yourself, I suppose it helps other people anyway. You know, but when you flip it and you're not.
Is that because you were trying not to be selfish?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I've made decisions before and then when I look back now, I think, I shouldn't have done that. Because that's always how I felt. I always used to think like that. It weren't just about me. When I was playing and I was doing well, and I think that thing of, you know, making my family proud, you know, whether it's mum, dad, granddad, nan, you know, siblings, cousins, whoever it was. Because I was lucky, I had a lot of support. I mean, at every game, I had like 15 people at every game. You know, it's just like...
You had your whole crew there.
Yeah, but there was times where I'd get offers to go places and I think, you know what?
I don't think that's a bad trait, but I understand what you're
saying.
It's
not a bad trait.
But you do see the transition of players that have entered the game with the absolute love and just insurmountable passion for the game. And then as soon as price tags get placed, expectations are really high. I feel like they do lose the love.
Do you think that's the pressure?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not the footballer.
Maybe not just football. I just think athletes. I think maybe
you do
different.
See them change, like the performance changes.
Yeah, performance changes. And listen, we're all human. I can imagine it's difficult. But that's why I think it's important to have the right people around you. That's so important. And I'll always say that to young players.
Yeah.
You know, listen to your family. Listen to the people that love you, because they're the people that are genuine and they really care. Whereas if you get the wrong people around you and they, you know, you get led astray, then I'm not saying it's difficult to come back and that, but, you know, people talking football.
And how easy is it to get led astray?
Easy.
If we were talking football.
Do you know what it is? You can never prepare yourself for what comes with it. So we spoke about me growing up in the East End and just kicking a ball around on the street. But that's all it was back then. It was just football and that's it. But then as time goes on, you realise, it's so much more than just football. Like, football can give you so much. But on the flip side, you think, there's times where you just feel vulnerable and exposed. And then you do get paranoid because you think, because you go through certain experiences and you think, you just feel like everyone's after you.
It's hard to trust people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to trust people.
Yeah.
And it can become difficult. But I just don't think, for young players, I just don't think you can prepare yourself for that sort of attention. You just can't.
And is it, so would you then, when you're considering talking and coaching your players, how will you prepare them for that? Because it's almost like an inevitable thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not the best, is it? Because you're almost kind of, you're showing them red flags that you may not have potentially seen, but you've learned through your journey.
Because you get different characters.
It's going to be a tough ask, I think.
Yeah, you get different characters. I was quite resilient from young. I was quite like, my mentality was, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make it. I'm not going to get distracted. And then when you're actually there, because there's one thing getting there, but once you get there, you've got to stay there. So
that's exactly what Usain Bolt said to me.
Yeah,
there's being one thing number one is easy, but staying number there, one is
because
hard.
Because once you get there, and then people expect then, because when you're young, when you're sort of like coming through, you can sort of like make mistakes. Because people, that, oh, he's young, you know, he'll learn, he'll get better, he's got time. But then once you get there and you hit that sort of level that you want to reach, if you dip below that, people start asking questions and then people start coming for you.
Did you think you reached your absolute peak?
Well, yeah, because I think if you speak to any, say, centre forward, an English centre forward, if you play in the Premier League, you think, okay, then it's the best league in the world. This is good.
Yeah.
And you're scoring consistently. So you can do it at that level and you're confident you can do it. But for me, it was always, okay, what's next? Can I do it for England? Can I do it for England? Can you do it in a major tournament? So I think once you've done that and you think, okay, then I've done it. Then of course, but at the same time, whilst you're in it, you always feel like you can do more.
Yeah. Like, and you had the opportunity as well, didn't you, to go through the different leagues?
You always feel like you can do more. Mm. No matter what you achieve, it's always that, I can do more.
That's great, though. That hunger is what will keep you going, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Amazing stuff.
Pain.
I feel like pain it comes hand in hand with everything. You know, if we talk about love, there's always the antithesis of it is pain. Can you share some moments where you really were at your lowest and what did you do to help you get out of those situations?
I think there's been loads of times, like in football, away from football, there's been loads, obviously, that people see in the film, you know, losing people that are close to me.
Yeah, your father.
Yeah, I remember when I lost my nan, that was tough because I was really close to my nan. Yeah. It's like a second mum.
The matriarch of the family.
Yeah, I was spoiled. I had like my mum, my nan, like, I was like, that sort of, you talk about love, like, I loved my nan. Mm. Remember, my mum showed me, it was so funny, my mum showed me a video, a tape of my nan's 40th birthday party, right, in Canning Town, East London. And I remember she was dancing, I don't even think it was my granddad, it was someone else, probably an uncle or something, but I didn't know it. I was only two, and I ran over to her, got in between them, and like pushed him out of the way. And then when I watched it, I just started laughing because I thought, that's crazy, because I remember what she meant to me. I was so close to my nan, like it was unbelievable. So when I lost my nan, that was pain. That was tough. And then after that, unfortunately, obviously I lost my dad, my brother.
Your cousin.
My cousin, Hannah. So it's hard to describe it really, because I say it was pain, but you still feel that it will never go anyway. Mm. You know, it will never go. I do think it helps talking about it, but it will never go. And I think having the right people around me at that time helped, and football as well. because I always felt like that was my escape. When I was training and I was around like my teammates and matches, I wasn't thinking of anything else. It was just, okay, football, living in the moment. And as soon as the game stops and you go home, it's then it's all the problems.
Because that's like real pain, isn't it? You could look at superficial pain, like the press talking crap about you.
Or the manager drops you and that.
Or the manager drops you, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is a different, like a deep, intense level of pain.
Yeah, because when you're young and you're standing there carrying your nan's coffin and then your brothers and then your cousins, that's like, you can't even describe what that's like.
Yeah.
Because it's so, when you're so confused and you don't understand, but you have to accept it because in our culture, you know, coming from like a Christian background, it's like, God don't make mistakes. So you have to accept it. Yeah. But at the same time, you're still confused. It was tough. And then so that's why even after that, when people used to speak about pressure and the pressure of football, so I never felt pressure in football because I just felt like that you don't get bigger pressure than that. Like, and that was, so with football for me, it was just not easy, but I'm just going to enjoy this. It was never pressure for me because I felt proper pressure.
And what's interesting about you as well is that you, if we flipped the pain on its, you know, the other side, you've almost pushed barriers in terms of pain, like when you started to do, you know, you stopped drinking, for instance, that's a challenge in itself to do that, to then try, you know, veganism, to kind of look at other methods of pushing your pain threshold in terms of your body for recovery.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was fueled by the real pain that you had felt for you to see, like, you know, were you kind of almost just battling with yourself?
I think just elite mindset.
Why did you stop drinking?
Never really drunk. It's not even like I stopped. Like, I've never had a hangover. Someone said to me recently about a hangover. I said, what's that? I've never had a hangover before. And never really got involved in it.
Yeah.
Of course, I used to go out. I used to be out all the time. When the boys go out after a game, I'd be there. But I didn't feel like I had to drink. Because I always felt like if I drink and put this, I always called it poison in my body.
Yeah.
That's going to affect how I play.
Yeah.
And then from day one, I always said, nothing's going to affect how I play. When it comes to football, I'm not cutting any corners. I'm just going to do it right. And if I play for 15 years, at least at the end of it, I can be like, you know what? I'll try my best. And I'm lucky enough, I played until I was 39. And I honestly think if I was someone that sort of like went out drinking all the time, getting, I probably would have got injuries, probably wouldn't have played at 39.
Yeah. So. And I also think it's almost a self-destruct button for a lot of people if you don't really know what it's going to do to you. Yeah. I mean, 22 years of a career.
The drinking was never my thing. Yeah. Ever. Just drink Red Bulls.
I'm not sure how much goodness is in Red Bulls, to be fair, if you're worrying about what's going in your body.
Self-belief. That's the biggest thing.
Exactly.
That's the biggest thing. I think if you believe in yourself, nothing can stop you. And sometimes you get periods where you get challenged. But we spoke about before, like you can have all the talent in the world. You don't work hard and believe in yourself. It will be very difficult. Because I always believed in myself. I didn't need anyone to motivate me. So I wasn't one of those players, athletes, who needed a manager to say, oh, you got to do more, or you got to stay behind after training, or you got to do ice baths. I was one of those people that if you said to me, whether you're a doctor or you're a nutritionist, whether you're a physio, fitness coach or the manager or whatever it was, tell me once and I'll do it. Just tell me once. I was never one of those, you tell me once, I'll do it. Or if I was in a gym and someone said to me, do 10 reps and you turned your back, I wouldn't do 8, I'll do 10 or 11. So I was like that from young, and that's just that elite mindset. And I always believed in myself. Always, even periods were like when I went in the team, or like I went periods without scoring goals, and I always thought, stay calm, never worried about anything. I thought at some stage this will change.
How did you actually then, when you had those moments, because you know we all have them.
Yeah.
What's your method of just redressing that imbalance?
I just keep calm. Yes, yeah, so I've just always believed in myself. And I think what I used to do is as well, I used to watch a lot of
footage of myself playing. So even when I had, like, periods when I hadn't scored, I'd go home and I'd watch like DVDs of how I played, and I'd compare it, you know, one game to another game, and I'm just almost like coaching myself. You know, I'd be at training, listen to the coaches, but I'd go home and I'd watch a lot of football and just always wanted to improve. But I think self-belief is massive.
Did you give yourself like a hard talk when things weren't going right?
I just did more.
Yeah.
I just did more. And I always felt the harder you work, the luckier you get. So I always used to work hard and think, if I'm putting in all this effort, surely I'm going to get something back, because that's how the universe works. So I'll just work as hard as I can.
What I think is really interesting now is this whole concept of social media. And because a lot of what we talk about has become, like, you're talking real, you know, you're giving real life examples of stories that have happened. Whereas I feel like now we're in a day and age where these words are just getting thrown about, you know, motivation, self-belief.
You've got to do it.
Yeah. And I don't know whether, because what's interesting about your career is that you started when there wasn't social media.
No.
You know, if people had an opinion about how you played, it was, you'd heard it on the day.
Yeah, or
you'd
read it in the newspapers.
Afterwards,
yeah,
or you'd hear it in the newspapers. Now we're in a situation where, you know, people are
There's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
For players, there's nowhere to hide because you get it in the papers. The
how press. Did you deal with that though? Because, like, didn't, you know, again, you came from that space where there wasn't that, and then you had to transition into it.
It was. I wouldn't say it was easy.
Yeah.
Because I could sit there and say, yeah, I was resilient, I was mentally strong, that sort of stuff. There was times where it's like, it gets to you, but then I've got to snap out of it quick and be like, listen, at the end of the day, people are going to have their opinions. Because when I open a paper up, and I'm on the back page of the papers, and
as a love rat.
Yeah, that's the front page. But even stuff
sorry.
Like that. It's like, I mean, it's people's opinions.
Mm.
It's people's opinions. And these people, like, they've, you know, I'm sure these people that are writing, they've made mistakes.
Yeah.
But I'm not writing about them. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's made mistakes. No one's perfect. But like I said, it's I always try to just snap out of it and just thought, right, I'm in control of everything. Because if I'm going through like a difficult spell in my football, I'm in control. I have to work harder. I have to be better. And a good thing about football, the next game comes around quick. So you can have a bad game and then you've got a few days, you might get yourself down. But then come the weekend, you've got another game. So there's another opportunity to put things right. So it's not like boxes.
You don't have that anymore though, do you? So how do you cope with still... Because you still have to have self-belief now, just taking a different form.
Yeah. I've always believed
that. Or is the fact that you've done so much, that is what will still continue to reinforce your self-belief in no matter what you do?
No, for me, it's what's next though.
Mm.
I think that's gone. I think you can't always look back and be like, oh, no, what's next? So this transition from player to coach or whatever it is, what's next? And how can I be the best I can be? How can I become the best coach? You talk about breaking barriers. Okay, then. Why can't I manage in the Premier League? You know, people talk about numbers and statistics, you know, 4.4% black managers. Okay, why can't I be the next? Why can't I be the first black England manager? So, for me, it's what's next. And I'll do whatever it takes. You know, I mentioned before about, you know, once someone tells me to do something and I believe it's good for me, then I'll do it. I'm doing all my badges. I'm doing everything that everyone else has done that's been in my position and finished playing and been given opportunities to manage. I'm doing exactly the same. So we'll see what happens. But if I do become a manager, I'd want to be the best manager. I don't just want to do it and tick a box and be like, oh yeah, I've managed. I had one or two jobs. No, I had a 23-year footballing career. Why can't I do that as a manager?
I believe you can.
Let's see.
Watch this space.
Challenge.
So I always wonder, right, because challenge is an interesting word in that there's lots of definitions. And in your footballing career, a challenge could have just been what you experienced constantly on the pitch against the defender.
Hmm.
But the way I see it is that you're facing that fear every time you step onto the pitch.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about generic challenges and everybody has them in life, but you're actually volunteering to step out onto a pitch knowing you're going to get someone do something because ultimately your goal is to score.
Yeah, and
how do you prepare for that?
I have to dominate whoever I'm playing against. It's 11v11, but really, it's 1v1.
Yeah.
So I always felt like whoever I'm playing against, you have to be ready because I'm fully prepared. And like I said about doing things that maybe, because I always used to do things and I always used to think, I wonder if that player's doing it. If I'm playing against someone like the night before the game or the day before the game, I'd be doing stuff and I'd be like, I wonder if he's doing that. I hope he is because that's the level. So the day before the game, my preparation never changed from maybe West Ham youth team. Obviously, you get more knowledge because you get that along the way. When you're speaking to like senior professionals and you learn and you understand your body more, you know when you need to train, you know how to recover, you know what to eat. But my preparation has always been good. And I always did things that a lot of players didn't want to do. So I would do like, you know, cryotherapy.
Yeah.
So a lot of the boys, cryotherapy came in and then people started getting at the training ground. And I remember...
Because they brought it in at Sunderland, didn't they? Yeah. After you said, yeah.
So I remember the boys doing it and Big Sam was there and I started doing it. And I said to the boys, I was doing this last year. They were bringing a unit to my house. I was paying big money just to do it because I was investing in myself.
Yeah.
I never thought about the money. I thought, I'd rather spend X amount on the cryotherapy for 2 minutes than go out and buy a pair of trainers. Because at the end of the day, this is...
I'm sure you bought the trainers as well.
Yeah, but you know, do you understand what I'm saying though?
Yeah, this is
gonna,
but you this still is, decided
investing
to myself. Invest.
This is going to help my performance. So for me, that was normal. And even when I went to Rangers and that, I thought, I used to do the cryotherapy, go and have my lunch and do ice baths. And the players would be like, why are you doing ice baths? You just did the cryo. No, I'm doing both. Because other people ain't doing this. And then you play, and like I said, I was able to play 39. Yeah. And probably can still play now.
Yeah.
So yeah, those sort of like, so that's how I thought. But I loved the challenge anyway. Yeah. I loved the challenge. I think the bigger the game, for me, I always felt like I got the best out of myself. Loved the challenge.
That might be the last word.
Fame.
I feel like it goes hand in hand with being an athlete. Do you love it or hate it?
I'll never say I hate it. Because why would I say I hate it? Because the feeling I get when I walk into someone and then the love that people give you, you can't hate that. That's... Because I think I hear a lot of people say that, I hate it. But really, do you hate it? Be honest. Because how can you...
You need it kind of, don't you, really?
Of course you do, because it's a nice feeling.
Yeah.
There's been times where you don't like it. Obviously, there's moments where you think, if I was not normal, I don't know if that's the right word, but if I went in a public eye, that wouldn't have happened, or this wouldn't have happened, and people just leave me alone, stop writing stuff, of course.
You'd never met Bradley, would you?
Wouldn't have met Brads.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't hate fame, because... When you're...
What about when it breeds insecurity, though?
What do you mean?
So, when you're famous, there are opinions, and we kind of touched on it earlier, but you can't help but then be in the limelight for whatever it is that you do, and then people have an opinion about you, whether that's good or bad.
And you get insecure.
You get insecure.
You can't allow it, though. You have to be strong. You can't allow people's opinion... to change like the opinion of yourself. You just can't allow it, because it's like now you talk about social media. How many players have you seen recently that actually come off? I see it all the time. We had it at Tottenham with a player where he had to come off Twitter because after one of the games, it got so bad that he had to come off Twitter. I just thought, like, why are you even allowing people to get to you like that? Because I know... It's nice when everyone loves you, but that's never going to happen.
It's also not going to be forever.
And especially like if you get a good feeling when people say nice things about you, you have to take it on the chin when people say bad things about you.
Yeah, comes with the territory.
And everyone gets it at some point in their life. Everyone gets it. Every footballer gets it. I see it with Ronaldo when he was at Manchester, when he went back to United.
Yeah.
Hearing the fans talk about Ronaldo and like hear pundits talk about Ronaldo. How people say about Messi. I'm like, really? Messi's at PSG and he's getting booed.
Yeah.
Messi getting booed. How? So, listen, it doesn't matter, football, sports. I'm a massive boxing fan. I hear people talk about all different fighters. He's this, he's that, he's that. Like, really? Yeah, you have to appreciate greatness. You just have to appreciate it and hold your hands up and be like, you know what? This person's great and what they've done. And yeah, you just can't let people get to you. But fame, like, there's been loads of times when I thought, yeah, I wish, at times, I wish I can just walk around and not get hassled. You might have been sent up a mood and you're not really in the mood to talk to anyone. But at the same time, I'll never, ever say I hate it, because it's been a blessing. It's been,
yeah.
It's been amazing, and my life could have been a lot different.
Listen, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you for your openness, for your honesty. Thank you for sharing the stories that you did. I think, you know, a lot of people will be able to take away from this that resilient self-belief pretty much fueled your success and still keeps you who you are. If you guys have enjoyed this episode, please make sure you subscribe, you comment, share. We need to grow this tribe. We need to get more and more people on this journey of self-discovery. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you, Jermaine. It was
amazing. No problem. Pleasure.